Hello, before we get going on the podcast, let me first tell you about DNA Discoveries. So DNA Discoveries is a program of online talks that can help you learn more about DNA for family history. You can find answers to questions such as why you should be wary of working with tiny matches. What's the science behind these tests? You can also learn about the excellent tools such as Banyan and Watteau, which can help you really work out those difficult cases in family history and DNA when you really feel like you're not going to get to the bottom of it, but these tools can help you do that. Our programme of experts are truly amazing, and we're so proud to be working with people like John Cleary, Michelle Leonard, Donna Rutherford, Sophie Kay, Blaine Bessinger, Karen Evans, Laura House and Jana Hellstein. We know it's going to be such an informative and inspiring set of talks, and we really look forward to seeing you there. You can find out more at www.family-tree.co.uk, and the talks start on the 24th of March. Hello and welcome to the Family Tree podcast. I'm Helen Tovey, editor of Family Tree, and with me is
Nathan Ward. Hello there.
Hello. So I've been having lots of fun with family history this week. How about you?
A ridiculous amount. I'm quite excited about what I've done, to be honest.
Yes.
You go first.
Well, I have eventually started doing my Mary Ann Pickering reconstruction, finding the Pickerings in Woolerton. So I've just actually got round to it. I started this project May last year. So that's, 7 or 8 months of just battling around, doing little bits and then getting sidetracked by many, many other rabbit holes. And I promised last week I was going to make a start. And so I actually did make a start trying to gather together all the Pickerings who live in the Woolerton area through the Victorian period, because then I can try and group them up into families. And some of them will be my close relations and some of them will be the sibling branches. None of it's going to be a waste of time. All of it's going to be fascinating. And I'm ready to start. So I'm so relieved.
Great stuff. It sounds like a lot already.
It's a very small community, so it's not so much, but it is a popular name in that area.
Right.
Okay. Kind of that it is a Morgan. Whatever. I'll find out. I'll be able to let you know over the weeks.
This isn't anything to do with the Loptoff branch, is it? This is something different entirely.
It's the people before the lopped off branch. I had to lop off some of their ancestors, but these ones are definitely safe.
Right, cool.
Well, yes.
Fingers crossed.
Still, I'd mind a hot war. At the moment, I think I'm definitely related to these people.
As long as you've been doing your research log, you'll know what's going on.
I do my research log, honestly. Though I have, that's why I know I started it May last year, because I got my research log. Mm. And so I can see where I've picked it up and put it down and gone around the houses, gone off on little detours. And it has been so invaluable, because I had there was like 7 bullet points at the bottom of the research log that said what you need to do next time. So the last time I properly looked at this was November. And we're now kind of, you know, in the early spring of 2025. So that's another quarter of a year's gone by since I'd actually done anything at all on it. But the research log was just like brilliant. It was like, do this, do that. I was like, okay. I'm never, ever going to fall out of love with research logs.
No, I know. You are the advocate. You are the patron saint of research logs.
I actually am, aren't I? Yeah.
You are.
I like it. I love that. Yes.
You get your little embroidered picture, the frame, put on your wall.
Yeah, and the badges. Yeah. Are you doing a research log? Yeah.
Nice. Well, we'll have to do that. St. Helen.
Yeah. What are you been doing then?
I feel like I'm naughty in doing this, but I'm not, because I've prattled on about it so much. But I've made progress with Tankman.
No way.
Lots of progress. It was really exciting. It was like, it was exciting. It was also a little bit heartbreaking. I've gone through quite a range of emotions with it, which I actually wasn't expecting to do. Do you know what? I'm going to have to get my research log on screen, because I can't remember the order of...
When we last spoke about this, I don't think you were entirely sure even which war you were looking at, whether it was the First or Second World War. Like, you were trying to find out where this man may have fitted into your family tree. So you've made a lot of progress then.
Yeah, well, I think I said to you the other week, I ran past the war memorial.
Mm-hmm.
I call the cenotaph, and it said World War One, so that cleared that up for me.
Mm.
And I can't even remember how I got to it. Bear with me 1 second whilst I consult my research log. So I was looking for my Auntie Mildred, which obviously we sorted with the live research. And in that, we found that there was a guy called Alan, who actually was called William Allen, and that was Mildred's husband. Anyway, William had lots of siblings, and one of them was called Edward. And the guy on the Cenotaph Memorial thing was called E. Nelson. So I went looking for that. I went looking for him. This is textured. Again, research logs got stuff on there, but it's hard to quantify where I got to and how I got there. I guess I'll start backwards. Basically, in the end, my great-great-granddad was married to Maggie Nelson, who was William's mother and a bunch of other people's mothers. So I'm changing my mind now. What I did was I was looking at George Horatio Nelson, which is obviously, he's the father. He was married to Maggie Nelson. And it's quite a unique name, obviously, with the middle name being Horatio. So he stands out like a sore thumb. And randomly, his name appeared on a World War I pension ledger. He was the recipient of the pension of someone who died, and it was Edward. So I found that Edward had died, and his money was going to George Horatio Nelson. So I've got this document. It tells you his regiment. It tells you the day he died, and obviously it relates to George Horatio Nelson. But interestingly, on this document, he wasn't the original recipient. The original recipient was Edward's stepmother. But she had died before Edward. So they've crossed it out and they've put George Horatio Nelson. So it was all very exciting to find all this, because it's interlinking everybody. But then it also establishes that George Horatio Nelson remarried after my great-great-grandma died. So he's got another wife, and obviously Edward must have liked her a lot to have thought to give her the money from his pension as opposed to his dad, which was interesting. And then I also found another two siblings. I found an Eric, who is the son of the new wife. And then I also found a daughter called Ida. I haven't found a lot about her. I'm thinking she's died young. It's all quite tragic. I'm like, suddenly I've adopted George Horatio Nelson. He's like my favourite ancestor. But I feel really like sad and sorry for him. His wife had died, so he remarried. She dies, and then his son dies in the war. It just all felt a bit tragic, and I actually felt quite emotional about it, which I honestly didn't expect to feel. You know, it's just a bunch of names and a bunch of dates on paper, but it actually got me a bit. You watch Who Do You Think They Are, and they're like, oh, that really touched me, oh, I'm feeling emotional. And I'm like, shut up, it's TV. But actually, it really did. It struck a chord with me. So
definitely. And I think it just shows the value. There's so many values of researching those sideways branches of our family tree. Like, actually, an episode of the podcast doesn't go by where we don't talk about it. And yes, it's useful for DNA, but without getting these other people on our family tree, and many of, you know, they did die young, or they did die in the war, whatever reason. So their stories haven't been passed on. They haven't got direct line descendants. If you only do a pedigree with your direct line ancestors, you're seeing their lives in isolation. And you're not seeing these other people, which were central to their lives. Like you've just said about George Horatio's two wives passing away before him, some of his children. It's gained so much better understanding of his life, despite the few extra details.
Yeah, it's just really tragic as well. My initial research, and obviously looking at, I think it was a 1921 and maybe the 1911, I couldn't find this. This Ida, there was nothing of her. She's a much earlier one. I can't remember which one. I probably can, because it's probably on my research log. She was on the 1901 census, but didn't appear on the 1911. That's my research log there. I've got notes.
It's brilliant.
Pardon me.
She may not have died. Let's say she could have been born in... It depends. If you've looked at the 1891, she could have... You may find her on the 1891 if she's well a lot older. Or she. It could be that she was born... You know, say she was born in the 1890s. By 1911, she could be a teenager and could be living out somewhere for work. So she might have lived. That'd be...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, fingers crossed. I've not researched that path yet. I was literally getting so many hits for Edward and the war.
So this is brilliant. So with Edward, it sounds like his service record has survived. So it was the 3 in 10 chance, because roughly 70% of those records have been destroyed. And it sounds as though his is one of the lucky ones, the records which survived.
Yes. The ones that I've seen are the World War One pension ledger.
Okay.
And he's also on the World War One medal roll.
Okay. Yes. So the service records, I think, which are destroyed, and then the pension records, they're called the unburnt records. But that's really cool. It's really cool that you've got his records. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's some document that will show that he's got a medal for doing something. So
yes,
I'll have a look at that at some point.
So on that medal index card, that will show which medals he got.
Yes. I think that off the top of my head, he got a choice. Well, I say a choice of, the role says two options.
Hmm.
And I can't quite work out which one it is.
Mm. So probably if he's got two, probably what he's got is the Victory Medal and the British War Medal. And so what happened was, at the start of the First World War, in the British Army, then people volunteered. So if you volunteered in 1914, and if you were fighting, I think you had to be fighting before November 1914 in an active, you know, theatre of war, then you'd get the 1914 star. And then if you... were fighting in 1914 or 15, you got the 1914 to 15 star. You wouldn't get both, you get one or the other.
Right.
And then there's kind of like a bit of a cachet. I don't know what the right word is, but that means that your ancestor volunteered to fight. Then if your ancestor signed up after the end of 1915, they were fighting from 1916 onwards, that was because conscription got introduced at the start of 1916. So there's many reasons why our ancestors may have joined the war later. It may have been they were too young to join up earlier. It may have been they were in, depending on their line of work, whether they were, the age of them, whether they had dependents. Some people didn't want to fight. You get the impression like it was really patriotic when you look back on it. But at the start of the war, people weren't necessarily... Some people were patriotic and rushed to sign up to fight, but many other people didn't. There was lots of political turmoil.
Right.
Some people actively didn't want to fight. They were conscientious objectors and they had to go to trial to try and prove good enough reasons not to fight. So they're just as much a mix of values as we are today. It's not like
right.
It was just rushing to grab their gun or anything at all. It was just like today, a mixture of people.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense.
Well, your tree's looking good.
Yes, I've just realised I've sold you some very duff information.
Oh, excellent! But you've noted that, so that's not a problem.
Oh well, because I was talking about Maggie Nelson being married to George Horatio, but Maggie was George Horatio's daughter.
It's because you've got two Margarets in a row, isn't it?
Yes. George Horatio Nelson was married to Margaret. Margaret was the one who died, and then he remarried someone called Teresa, which I've not actually put down yet, but between the two
minor that doesn't reflect the context of the story, does it?
No,
it's fine.
But yeah, between the two of them, we've got loads of kids. And I'm just gonna look at Edward's.
So I'd love to know more about Edward then. What have you managed to learn? What can you tell me about him? So to you, he was called Tank Man, and that's all you knew. So where have you gone from that? Basic details. So what's his relationship to you to start with?
Oh boy.
Can you see it? It says it just below his name on...
Oh yeah, he's my great granduncle.
Yeah.
Great granduncle, that's an interesting term.
Yeah. So you could, it's the same thing as a great great uncle.
Right, right.
And so when it's a great great uncle, it's the same generation as your great grandparents. So a great uncle is the same generation as your grandparents. So a great great uncle is the same as your great grandparents.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Never heard that term before.
I didn't come across it that much. Some people love it and it's their favourite phrase and they're like, no, you've got to say great-granduncle. And the people who love it really, really love it. And clearly Ancestry loves it. And then I don't love it. I go great-great-uncle. But
yeah, I find great-great's easier to put into context because you've got the levels, don't you? Where great-great-grand.
Yeah.
Confusing.
Mm.
So what do I know about him? I have found out his death. He died on the 8th of August, 1918. That was on his pension ledger. Found out his regiment number from that ledger as well. Mm-hmm. And that turned out to be... hang about. It turned out to be... It says something about the 7th Battalion. And then I also found one that said he was in the Queen's Guard, maybe? Mm-hmm. And he died in France. It said... Wait, it says France and Flanders. Is Flanders, mm-hmm. is that a place in France? Am I being...
So that's, you know, not be silly, it's Belgium, but it's the, I guess you call it the same campaign. So it's the same military campaign. It's the Western Front.
Okay.
It's where all the horrible, super muddy trenches and the horrible attrition rates of people dying and, you know, the no trees, mud for miles around.
Yep.
All the grim... just entrenched literally for 4 years. Like they got there in August 1914, didn't really make much progress for the next 4 years and were stuck there. Yeah.
Right. Okay, cool.
But this, we'll be able to find out. I think you look like you've been to the Commonwealth War Grave website, which is cool.
I went to one that it came from Ancestry anyway.
Yes. Oh, that's cool. So now we're looking at his medal index file, which he got on Ancestry. And so... yeah, he's in the Queen's Regiment.
Yeah.
And he's a private.
Yeah.
And you've got his regimental number. And I don't know what this means, but it's got a G at the start, which I think could be, I'm guessing like mad, it could be gunner. Someone can correct us. And also we can find out. Let's make a note to ourselves to find out, because that'd be interesting.
Yeah, because literally at this point now with this guy, I have these records about World War One.
Yeah.
But the details... I don't know what to get from them.
So then this is, now we're looking at which medals he was eligible for. So he's eligible for the Victory Medal and the British War Medal. Mm-hmm. But that means that he was fighting from 1916 onwards. So he's fighting 1916, 17, 18. And then if you scroll down a little bit further, it might say, so it doesn't, as the war goes on, it becomes less good at recording, but on that first side of the card, it says Theatre of War first served in. And sometimes there'll be a little code there. And so you'll be able to find out where he first served. So it might have been, let's say, Gallipoli or Flanders or whatever. But you know, because he died, you know at least that he was fighting in Flanders. And let's look at some of the other records you got then.
There's another one, this one, UK World War One Service Medal and Awards Roll.
Yeah, that's great. So that's very similar to what the medal index card is, but it is worth looking at because sometimes it has additional detail. Sometimes you might find extra regimental numbers, or you might find a battalion number. It's a bit of potluck in my experience what you actually find extra. So here we go.
So he's got his number again. He's private, 7th RWS.
Yeah, let's scroll up to the top because they've all got RWS and it's probably something really obvious. Here we go. So in the top of the screen...
Royal West.
Royal West Surreys. So that's why it's always good scrolling up to the top of the document because half the time it helps to decode itself. Whereas when you just hone in...
Queen's Regiment as well.
Yeah. So that's probably... the Royal West Surreys is another name for the Queen's Regiment. And anybody who knows about military history is probably going, oh my goodness, these Muppets are so slow at this. But that looks all like it fits, doesn't it?
Yeah. So this is dated, stamped here as 1920, but he died in 1918, did I say?
That's because after the war, there's obviously lots and lots of admin. It took months and months and ages for people to get demobilised, for medals to get allocated.
Right.
To tie up the kind of machinery of war. So that's fine.
So these are obviously allocated posthumous.
Yes.
And they'd go to relatives, would they, I guess?
Yes, and because he's a soldier, then his medals would have been sent out and they would have been engraved around the rim of it with his name and his number and his rank, I think, as well. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. And then I think the only other record I mentioned is the pension ledger, which... Oh, yeah, this is the one. It took me to Fold 3, whatever that is.
So Fold 3 is like a sub-branch of Ancestry. It's like an aspect of it that you can pay extra to view more records. But you should be able to view his pension records within Ancestry.
Oh, I thought so, yeah.
Cause... Yeah, within your Ancestry membership. Cheeky. Yeah, so it should definitely. So I think if you just went back to your main search and clicked on military and then found the pension records that way, you should be able to find him.
I've saved it. Although it's not showing it, is it? It's showing it as a...
Well, that's just the index cards, isn't it? Whereas on actual Ancestry, then they'll have the pension records.
Right. So this is what I've got anyway. Nelson, it's a bit pixelated. 7th Royal Western, Surrey, which it says application received. And then it says 8th of the 8th, 18, killed in action. Dependent is deceased, and that was his stepmother, which has been crossed out. And that's George Horatio Nelson replaced, and then obviously replaced there. And an address in Carvely again. So yeah, it was exciting to find all this bits and bats out. And then, like, since this, I've now gone back and talked to my mum because I was like, right, as I've said before, I didn't want to involve her. I wanted to try and see if I could research myself. So I've enjoyed actually being able to find these things, and then it led onto other bits and I've filled in a few blanks.
You definitely have. And because you've got the battalion he's with and you've got the regiment he's with, so he's with the 7th Battalion, the Royal West Surreys, and so you'll be able to track down the unit war diaries for them, and you'll be able to find out what they were doing around that time that your great-great-uncle died.
Okay, and where do I go to find that out?
So I would recommend you go to the National Archives website and you can search to find their to find the digitised copies of the unit war diaries. And if you make an account on the National Archives website, then you should be able to still download them free of charge. So they used to charge about £3.50 or £3.60 to download a record. Then in COVID, they stopped charging, and I don't think they started charging again, so it's going to be completely free, as long as you log in. If you can't get it without logging in, then that doesn't apply. But for the sake of creating an account, that's pretty easy and good, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I'll jump on that and try and find out. That's what I was going to say. Talking to my mum, she was saying that it was actually my Auntie Mildred who passed on this story about him dying in a tank. Mm. My mum says she's got no records of it. No one else has mentioned it. It was just a story that Mildred...
So for your Auntie Mildred, this is her... Is it her...
Brother-in-law. So there's no reason why she wouldn't be correct, I guess.
And it's amazing as well, isn't it, how you can remember Auntie Mildred and... So as a child, you can remember her, and then more decades pass and the story gets a bit misty, and then now you're having to do research, and suddenly you're realising, I love this feeling, that you were talking to someone who had first-hand memories of people who lived and died and everything through the First World War. And now, at our age, like, you're younger than me, but like roughly halfway through our lives, it's an extraordinary feeling to... Mm. Reach back in time and realise the people we knew, lived through those experiences.
Yeah, it makes me feel a bit, I don't know what the word is, but annoyed with myself for not asking more questions of parents.
Yes. And however many questions we ask, then there are always more questions. That's,
Like, my mum keeps giving me little bits like, oh, Nana used to work at a cinema, and it's like, it's a small detail, but I never knew that. And it's like, she never said that to me. And just really small things. It's like, oh my God, what else don't I know?
Do you know, doing our podcast, it is making me better at following out the questions. So sometimes we will chat about something and I'll know half the story. And then I've gone back to my mum in the interim and asked her for further details and written them down. So it is actually making me better at doing that, because sometimes I'm disrespectful about the stories, but you hear them, you think you're going to hear them again, you'll always ask next time, and it's easy to take them a little bit for granted because they're part of your kind of family currency or the conversations you feel like you can have anytime.
Yeah, definitely. And it sounds morbid, doesn't it? But it's terrifying that there's, well, for me, there's only really my mum to go to for these stories. So it's like, you need to get as many of them down as you can.
Mm.
You can appreciate that they're there, because otherwise, you know, as soon as, well, I'm not even talking about it, but there'll be a point when the questions won't be, I won't be able to ask the questions.
Mm.
And then it is just pure document work then. So yeah, make the most of your relatives while you've got them.
This kind of ties into this, but hopefully not so morbid. So quite often, as a family historian, we will advise each other and we'll ask each other, you know, or tell each other what the best way is to hand on our family stories and our family history to the people who are coming after us. But I want to ask you, because you can probably see both ways, because you're in the position, a couple of months ago, you were picking up your mum's research where she left off. So she's handed you on some research, or allowed you access to her research. And I think there'll be some bits about that that you really love and some bits about that that you find challenging. So can you give advice to existing family historians who've maybe got 10 or 20 years of knowledge or paperwork or whatever it is stashed away in their heads and on their desks? What's the best way? What's the most engaging way? What's the most inspiring way? What things would you like to see us do? What would be helpful to the people? What, from your point of view, what would be helpful and what's unhelpful?
That's a really tough question. I personally, for me, I enjoy the sort of the thrill of the chase and finding the details. So as much as I've got this big chest, well, it's not a chest, it's a metal box full of facts and information, it's brilliant that it's there, but I also don't want to rely on it. So I'm not sure where I sit on this one. It's hard because obviously I have gone through some of it, but without any links naturally to it, they are just a bunch of names and numbers. It's not necessarily, it's not my filing system. I haven't chosen this systematic system that my mum's used, even though she claims she hasn't used one, which probably is actually true when I think about it. So it's hard picking up someone else's research, is I think what I'm going to say. So yeah, do it for yourself, but match it up with the research that you've already got, I guess, would be my biggest sort of advice. Mm-hmm. Don't rely on it, but it's there as a buffer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I've taken it anyway. Because I could quite easily just literally put everything in that my mum's got and be like, yeah, this is fact. Whereas, and I know she'll have done a good job, but for my peace of mind.
And also just as, that's really interesting. So you like that feeling of discovery, and there've been some people who captured your imagination. So Auntie Mildred captured your imagination. You had to find out about her. Mm-hmm. Tank Man captured your imagination. Your great great grandpa George Horatio,
yeah, cool, he's my favorite now. Yeah, because when we first started, I don't know if you remember, I found one person quite early on with a Scottish surname, and I got thoroughly excited about that. I have done zero research on that person. That was going to be my link to the Vikings, my link to somewhere other than Pudsey, and I still am excited about that because there's a tartan to go with it. So it's going to be interesting. But I've gone off on this tangent and. Yeah, George Horatio, he's my new favourite. It's quite cool to have a favourite. I wasn't expecting to, again, I just expected them to be names, you know, quite clinical, names and numbers, facts and figures. And suddenly I've got people. It's nice.
And do you think as well, like, I'm sure he'll remain your favourite, but sometimes it's the ones, you're getting a sense of his story from the information you're finding out about him. So he's stopping becoming just a name. He's becoming a real person. And so you're really loving him for that, aren't you? So
yeah.
Do you think that's the key? You're actually getting to know him a bit.
Well, I mean, number one, he's got an awesome name, so that's mm-hmm. cool. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, I'm getting to know him. I feel really sad and sorry for him, to be honest. It sounds like he's had a hard life, and like, you know, to have two wives that both died, and a son that died, and a daughter that might have died. I'll find out. It just made me think, oh my God, this guy's done it really tough. And I was just like, I was loving the research and a bit of him and finding bits of bats out. And then suddenly you put it all together and you're like, oh my God, I feel just really sorry for this guy. And you've got like this emotional connection that, which like I said, I wasn't expecting to have. Mm. I'm like, I'm going to look after George. He's my favorite. Yeah, it's cool. I've actually got his wife. Oh, I might be feeding you a lie now. Wait a minute. Have I put this on my research log? Nope. Naughty Nathan. I got a couple of good pictures. One of them was of my great-granddad, which I think I've mentioned before. He used to sell, I thought he sold budgies, he sold canaries out of a van. I've got a picture of him with my granddad as a child, and he's like holding a little canary in front of him. It's a lovely picture. So I've got that. I'm going to add that to my tree. I haven't done yet. And then I think it's George's wife. I've got a caricature of her, and it's just really cool. And like my mum looks at it, and she goes, I can see myself in that, and I can see my mum in that. So she can see like the sort of hereditary aspect of it. It's cool.
Yes. So do you think with the caricature, so sometimes there are crazes on things, so caricatures would be cool. And then sometimes you see, you might have a little paper silhouette, just a little black and white silhouette of an ancestor. They could be popular. And with the photographs, I had a little locket. I've still got a little locket, but in there, I didn't realise until it accidentally fell open and the photo fell out. The photo was a little tin type, so it was printed on metal. And or developed on metal, I'm not quite sure how you say it technologically. Anyway, it was on metal, and apparently these were little cheap fairground photographs or ones you might get at the beach, and they were developed really, really quickly, and they're pretty durable. So you might find other little weird formats or weird images, you know, just from, not they're not weird, but they're just not things we're familiar with now. But
this one's massive.
Oh, wow.
So it's about the size of my head, is this picture?
Yes.
It's like in a big ornate circular frame.
Yes.
It's really cool.
It is really cool. So do you know what dimension it is? Is it like kind of 6 by 4 inches or something like that?
I don't work in inches, I'm afraid.
And 15 centimetres long by roughly.
Yeah.
You give them a postcard.
Maybe slightly bigger.
Mm. So that's a cabinet card. And in Family Tree magazine, then every month we talk about old photos. So if it's a cabinet card, then they were popular 1860s to about 1910. So that's quite a big, broad span. But knowing the format of the photos, that can help you date them if you didn't know when the photo was taken.
Okay, brilliant. I'm not sure this is a cabinet card. It might be bigger, actually.
Bigger, okay.
Is cabinet card like sort of postcard size? Is that what you're saying?
Bigger than a bigger. A cabinet card's the size, I would guess, of a modern postcard, but an old-fashioned postcard smaller.
Okay. This is closer to being about A4 in size.
Oh, it's really big, yes.
Yeah, it's a big, big frame.
Hmm.
It's just funny as well. Again, like I've got memories of this actual picture. It used to be up in my nana's house. Never, ever once asked who it was. It was just this. It was always there on the wall, ran past it, playing every single time I was over there. Nothing. And then now it's up in my mum's house. And again, until last week, nothing. Oh, yeah, that's one of my relatives. It's just really nice.
Mm.
All these connections are suddenly appearing everywhere.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely nice. Mm. Have you done any running genealogy over the last week?
I have a little bit, not to the degree that we discussed. Like, I haven't got very far. I've literally run to that war memorial thing. And actually, I ran to another one. There's one in the next village over. So I ran from one to the other. It's only a couple of miles. And Edward's on both of them. Is that a common occurrence to have?
Yeah, so it depends. It depends on the local communities who they put on the war memorials. So normally it would be the place where somebody lived, but there may be a reason for somewhere else to want to have him on the memorial as well.
Okay.
So it could be that one place was the place he was currently living at the time he died, or where his dad was living, and the other place could be a village where he grew up.
Yeah, well, that's exactly that. They lived down in Appley Bridge, and then I think later on they lived in Carvley, so both of those locations are next to each other.
Mm. So when it's the Commonwealth War Graves memorials, then they're very specific and very, I guess you'd say, like democratic and very regular. So if you've got a identified body, you're going to have your Portland stone headstone, those cream rectangular headstones, everyone identical. You might have an inscription on it, which has been added by a relative, but otherwise they're very, very identical, which is with the the names and the numbers, maybe a cat badge engraved into it. And if your body wasn't found, then the name would be on some of the massive memorials like Menin Gate or things like that. But then when it comes to local war memorials, so all around the country, there's the roughly 10,000 other war memorials. So sometimes a war memorial, so for instance, in Peterborough, they didn't have an actual war memorial. They built the hospital as a war memorial. So that was their war memorial, which is great until the hospital gets closed, which it has been closed now. And in the meantime, I think they've had two more different hospitals as time's moved on. And then it was only about 5 or 10 years ago they actually officially opened up an actual little war memorial, because suddenly, because the hospital had gone, they didn't have a war memorial. So war memorials, which aren't the Commonwealth War Graves, can be found in many different guises. They might be a wooden plaque inside a church, or they might be in a school for like a roll of honour of former schoolboys who'd left to fight and died. So you can find your ancestor named in more than one place, depending on what local communities, and it could be your sports teams, all sorts of places. They could crop up in different places.
Okay, cool.
As ever, there's never one simple answer for family history.
No. Yeah, just equally, it could just confuse me. I'd be like, oh, it's a different person called Eno.
It could be that as well.
Well, it does tie in with, like you say, where he was brought up and where he ended up living. So my mum believes it's the same person anyway. I think my mum suggested he's on another one somewhere, so I might have to go for a run and find that one.
Yeah, so it's really possible. Yeah, and if they've helpfully included any numbers, then you'll know for sure. If they haven't, then you'll have to do the normal thing of finding out how many other E. Nelsons from the area died the First World War. How many other possible contenders there were.
Well, that was interesting as well. Like, the first time I went on to the, I can't remember which one it is now, but one of the service medal documents, I accidentally started flicking left and right on it, and there were so many Edward Nelsons. It was like quite shocking. It's like, oh my god, there's loads of these guys. So I was like trying to navigate my way back to the original one that it put me on, which was quite confusing. But I got that.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you very much.
I'm just googling something, Nathan, because it's just bugging me.
What are you googling?
I'm Googling, because you know when you had your, so you got your Edward Nelson and he had his regimental number and it was prefixed with a G, and I'm just like, what does that mean? So I'm just desperate to find out. So this makes sense. So I'm on the Great War Forum. So it's greatwarforum.org, and it has what the prefix numbers are. So G, which is in the start of your ancestors' regimental number, stands for Home Counties Regiments, New Army Men, and later. So that fits perfectly with somebody in the Royal West Kent, because that's in the Home Counties, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. So I'll send you the link for that.
So I'm on the National Archives website. What do I do? Search the catalogue?
Yes.
What's the best process here? Type in the regiment number or...
So it is quite horrible searching the National Archives website. So you're going to want to, you can filter between the years. So you want to go 1914, you could put 1918, 1919. And then I'd start off by going unit, war, diary, Royal, West, Kent. And then I might put in Queens as well and see what comes up back. Then in my research results, even though I've put in the years that I want, I'm still having to refine it further to get the ones which are covering the First World War period. They're not coming up. So I'm not finding it easily. So I would play around. So they're going to be in the WO collection, which is like War Office. They're going to be in the WO collection in the National Archives.
Right.
And I have a funny feeling, but I can't remember off the top of my head, that some of them have been digitised and are available elsewhere, for instance, Ancestry, but I don't know that for sure. So that's why the National Archives would be my first port of call, because it's free here anyway. So I have done this, and I have got some war diaries for my ancestors, and I think it's going to be too slow fiddling around with the search to find them, but I would keep persevering.
I've found an interesting thing. I don't know quite what I'm looking at, but here it says it's the East Surrey Regiment. And then it says amalgamated with the Queen's Royal Regiment, which is the...
Well, let's have a look. Share your screen, because I haven't found anything yet then.
All right. Turns out I'm the better researcher.
Yes.
A jest, of course.
No, it's fine. Ooh. So... Yes, so you found lots of records. That's really interesting, regimental records. But what we want is the records to be, they'd be War Office records, and they're called Unit War Diaries. So that's what we're looking for.
Right, okay.
I might even just try Googling Unit War Diary, Royal West Kent. What was that other one called? Queen's Regiment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's Surrey, it's not Kent.
Oh, Royal West Surrey?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it was, wasn't it? See, oh, here we go, look. So I've Googled it, and Google come up with the 7th Battalion, Queen's Royal West Surrey Regiment. Ping. So I'm going to put that in the chat to you, because this is the link to precisely what you want to download. And then you can read about, I hope I've got the years right. I haven't checked the years, got all giddy, got all excited finding the right regiment. Yes, it's covering July 1915 to June 1919. So it's covering the period... which includes your ancestor. And so it says it is £3.50, or if you sign in, then you can get it for free.
Okay, cool.
And so to get that, all I Googled was Unit War Diaries, with the name of the regiment and the battalion. No, I didn't Google the battalion. Then I scrolled down the list of search results, and they were organised by battalion, so I chose the right one.
Nice. Cool, this is exciting, and I can...
Really exciting. It's so exciting, honestly. So when you read the Unit War Diaries, you just go through page by page, and some of the entries, they're almost kind of boring, because the soldiers are waiting to do things, which must have just been so grueling, and being on tenterhooks, and then other times, you know, there's obviously lots of activity, and because your ancestor's a soldier, you're probably not going to find him mentioned by name in the Unit War Diary. It will just say tragic things like 9 men lost. And so on the day that your ancestor died, it will say however many men died that day.
Right.
And unless there's only one man, you're not going to know it's your man. But they're still really, really valuable for reading, and it's worth not just going to their page, it's worth reading the preceding week or two, because you kind of get a feel for what's happening. And then you can also look up wider information to find out for that place, because it'll have the location marked on the Unit War Diary. So you can go to the National Library of Scotland website, get the relevant trench map covering that area, and then you can read the diary with the trench map and work out where they were moving, what they were doing, what was happening. And you can also probably, you might find it useful to Google a big picture of what was happening at that stage of the war, in those last few months of the war.
Right, so like some actual proper history mixed in with
interpersonal
movements. Yeah, that sounds brilliant.
It's so good. It's so interesting. Yeah.
I won't get my hopes up till I find something there, but...
But you will. You are, because you know his regiment, you'll be able to know what his regiment, they're the people he's fighting with, what they were doing. So obviously, you don't know precisely which company he was with, but you will be able to know what the whole battalion... So within a regiment, there are lots of battalions. Within a battalion, there are lots of companies. So you don't know which company he's in, but out of his battalion, you know what they were all doing.
That's really good. I just went into a daydream then where he suddenly started talking Irish and reciting poetry and then killing people.
Is that your SAS rookie?
Yeah, I need to stop watching that show, clearly.
Yeah.
I know it's not factual. Well, I mean, it's roughly based on some facts, but anyway, whatever.
Okay, so I'm such a nosy Parker that while we're talking, I've got the files and downloaded them, but I'm not going to look at them. Well, I can look at them. I might look at them. I might have a little peep. I'll send them to you, but then you can do what I said anyway and log in and do it and make sure you got them yourself to make sure I've got the right ones for you. So, Nathan, you've clearly been doing a lot of research. You have been showing off that you have actually been keeping a research log, which is great. But have you found anything else useful, any other tips that you can share from a relatively newbie point of view, which you're finding great to help you, or anything you want to warn people of not to do as they go about making their family history notes?
Well, I've not actually done this yet, but in doing my research for Edward, I've come across, obviously, all these brothers and sisters and then the two marriages. And then, so there's like been a sort of, for me, a big sort of question of chronology, like who is whose parent, who came first, who was born first. And it just seemed like a lot. And obviously, the other week we spoke to Jude and she was talking about doing a mind map. And I think when I stop looking at Edward and I go back to the whole family, I feel like this is the time for me to do a mind map, because obviously there's so many shoots and so many strands of what I want to find and working out who's going in where. And I think that's going to actually really help me sort of put that in place and get it all right. Because otherwise I just look at it, I'm like, well, I don't know who belongs to who and who's going where. And so I definitely fancy doing that. I think that's going to be the easiest way for me to get it down on paper. And then once it's all sorted out, transfer to Ancestry or wherever I want.
That sounds a good idea. And she said, didn't she, a big piece of paper. Or if you sell a small piece of paper, you're going to need sellotape to stick the small pieces of paper together.
Yeah, or the back of a roll of wallpaper, whatever.
Yes, any of those. That sounds really good. So what about our homework for next week? I think you've got still on the military research, aren't you? You've got
Yeah, definitely. I think I want to sort of, well, not wrap that up, but it will be good to obviously find out what happened to Edward, and then I can stop calling him Tank Man, or maybe continue to if that's what happened. So rounding that off, and then as I've just said, I kind of want to find out a bit more again about everything surrounding George Horatio, find out about his wives, what happened to them, and this rogue daughter who may or may not have died young. So I think that's probably enough, but I'll probably go off on a tangent anyway as soon as I start on one of them. Yeah.
That sounds very good. And that will give you, as you say, stopping just calling Edward Tank Man, but when your sons ask about him or any of your other relations, then you've got those stories to tell, which is what make the rest of our family get interested, when you can say more. When it's just the dates and the basic details, it's hard for them to get, you know, kind of enthused about our love for family history. But once you can tell them, oh, he was serving here, you know, he died there, his name's on this war memorial, and this is what this war memorial looks like, you can show them maps and pictures and photos, then they will be interested, it's guaranteed.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, I remember when we first started with this, you obviously, you say you like to tell a story or you like to have stories. And I honestly was like, well, I've only got my mum to tell me stories because there's no one else about. I won't be able to have these stories. I will just have facts and figures and names and numbers. But quite quickly, I'm now obviously getting a bit more texture. Like, I've obviously started building a life for George Horatio myself with just facts and figures, but it's all coming together. So it's really cool to think that you can actually find stories out, and these war diaries are hopefully going to even more flesh out Edward for me. So it's going to be great.
Fantastic. Good. Look forward to hearing more then.
Yeah, me too.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And if you want to find out more about Family Tree, then we do a weekly e-newsletter, which we do a couple of times a week, but the main one is on Monday, having an overview of things. And as well as our lovely podcast, we've got our magazines, webinars, courses, workbooks.
We've got a lot.
We've got so many things going on to help people do their family history. Yeah. So enjoy, everybody.
Well, thanks for listening.